And welcome to your economic forum entitled Money Matters on your community radio station. Today's show is show number 289, Rally and Tariffs. The show is about money. Money does matter. Matters money affects all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. My name's Mark Cunaberti. Thank you for joining me today. And remember, discussions in this show cannot be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative to Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. And past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. And welcome. Once again, my name's Mark Cunaberti. How is everybody today? So let's cover the market and see where we are. Well, my. Dow Jones up 204 today, Thursday, June 20th, 2019, year of our Lord, 12:11 p.m. Pacific Standard. Of course, you could be hearing the show at a different time, right? If you're in a different time zone. Or you could be hearing it recorded, as a variety of stations do take the show and play it again. Somewhere, sometime, and I'm not even sure when that happens. Okay, so the Dow's at 26,708. I think we're approaching a high. An all-time high. So every show we talk about these large numbers. 26,708 in the Dow. Now there are many other, let's say, supermarkets of stocks, NASDAQ, S&P, the Russell. But the most commonly looked at is a combination of 30 fairly large size stocks in the Dow 30, an index that was developed many, 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 many years ago. And the composite of the Dow, the stocks that are in it, has varied over the years. Underperforming ones can be taken out and replaced and can be weighted differently. So in the opinion of myself, it is kind of skewed. But people look at the Dow, so its number is real, right? The Dow is up, Dow is down. I believe the high set, pretty good amount of months ago. It was 26,919. Don't hold me to that figure. I could Google up the chart, but then it would take me away from the radio, which not good radio. So what does that mean? Well, first of all, these large numbers, 26,000 below us and 27,000 above us, are major resistance and support levels to those who follow technical analytics. Remember, no one method can predict market movements 100%. So at 26,711, the resistance level, the major one that most people who study technical analytics would agree would be 27,000. And that would be resistance. So it would have to punch through 27,000. And it usually, not always, might have some trouble punching through to the upside on those larger numbers. The support level, the major support level, would be down below us at 26,000. However, in technical analytics, there are major and minor support levels all through there. But most would agree who study those things and believe those things that those large numbers, 26,000 and 27,000, the one above us is a resistance, the one below us is a support. What's driving the market? Well, the market, you know, since Donald Trump was elected, the market went from 17,000 and change to 26,919, if my figure and memory serves me right. And, you know, major, minor blips, sell-offs, routes. The worst route since 08 and 09 occurred in October, November, and December of last year. Those of you that own stocks would remember that. It made it all over the news. Pretty good correction with a pretty wide, broad sell-off in that correction. Various markets fell varying degrees. Emerging markets fell harder than the Dow, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was the worst one since 08, 09, according to CNBC and most people that study these things. That was a bad one, the fall. And it culminated. If you were to look at the acceleration and the amount of drops and the velocity that it dropped and when it stopped, it culminated with a massive drop on December 24th, which those of you would know that that is December Christmas Eve of 2018. And so since then, it's been pretty much straight up again. Had one day, I believe, in the second or third week of the January that it kind of corrected 600 points, but kind of a hiccup. And so it was on its way. And then Trump started talking more tariffs. And down we went again. And the one of the ones that set it off was the Mexican tariff. He was going to go 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%, 25% every other month. And before he instigated those, before they went into effect, you know, the Dow was falling pretty hard. They said, oh boy, these are going to be pretty stiff. And the tariff talk came in. Traders were worried about tariffs again. And before they were initiated, he said that they had been lifted. There would be no tariffs. And the market's been up and away. And now he is threatening or promising or saying he will meet with China soon. And the China tariffs is what kind of started this whole thing that stopped its almost relentless ascent. So there you go. Can it keep going? Well, you know, I have an opinion on that. And but I'll refrain from that. Sometimes I give my opinion. Even if I give my opinion, the regulators get a little squirrely. But some days I do it when I'm in the mood. But I won't tell you what my opinion has been for quite some time. With the occasional interrupt of routes and falls, my opinion has been mostly in the opposite direction since November of 16, my opinion. Nobody can forecast market events. Past performance, no guarantee of future movements, right? Okay. So I did see an interesting article that I thought I would read today from USA Today. USA Today. And the article is entitled, Millennials, You've Got This All Wrong. You Need to Stop Saving for Retirement. I looked at that and said, what? How can that be? Anyway, the article starts out with a conversation about a friend and the author talking about investing in a 401k, and the gentleman had invested in a 401k, and he kind of left it there, but he didn't invest it in anything. He just had a big chunk of money. So it really hardly went anywhere. And so he used an example, a hypothetical example. Let's say a person averaged out putting $500 a month into a 401k for 40 years. That's a long time, and that's a lot of money, of course. Years ago, $500 was a lot, worth a lot more. It bought a lot more, so you felt it a lot more by putting $500. But let's say he did. And it received an average of 6% return in the market. Well, you tell me. Can we get 6% return in the market? You know, historically, that may be close, but I think in the last 10, 12 years, that maybe you might relook at that. The client would have $933,000 upon retirement, $500 a month, 401k, 40 years. But with the money just sitting in a savings account, it would have ultimately totaled about $240,000 instead of $933,000. Now, I don't know what interest rate he used over the 40-year period, because interest rates have varied all over the place. So it was lower than 2%, because he then goes on to say, even with a higher interest rate of 2%, that money in the savings would have grown to 370 instead of 933. So at 2%, it goes to 370. At 6%, it grows to 933. So it's a pretty, you know, liberal assumption, in my opinion. And then he goes on to talk about procrastination. And he says, intimidation is one simple reason. Often procrastination takes place and contributes to retirement plans, or they don't pick investments properly. He goes on to say, when he first signed up for a 401k, he being, they don't list the author here. That's rather interesting. I'm sure it's in here, but I can't find it. He says, when he first invested in a 401k, he was giving a very long list of investments, and he didn't know what to pick. Now, that's common, you know. That's really common. I am approached over the years by people who have portfolios, and they have 401ks, and, you know, I can't invest that for them unless they move the entire 401k under management. But a guy will bring me a list of all these things, and they're usually pretty vanilla sort of choices, usually mutual funds, et cetera, that are available there. So he's saying that sometimes you don't understand the terminology or what's being offered. It can lead to procrastination. And so I don't know. That's basically the gist of the article about procrastination. So I don't know why he's saying you need to stop saving, because I think what he's saying is you need to start investing versus savings, right? He's saying you stop saving because in a savings account at 2%, you 240 would turn 500 a month would over 40 years would turn into 240. 2%, 370, and investing at 6% would be 933. Well, I guess that goes without saying. You could use 10% and it would really go up. So I just thought it was interesting that the you know, gist of this article was procrastination. So I've always recommended, no matter what you are, no matter who you are, no matter what you make, you should put some money in there, because compounding is a remarkable mechanism. And even Albert Einstein mentioned compounding and how effective it was. Compounding obviously is. Like, for instance, if you have a savings account in the bank and it's just a normal savings account and you get a couple of percentage points in interest on your savings, which nowadays is really generous, and you didn't have to pay tax on it, then the 2% would earn 2% on the 2%, right? And then it would continue to build, and so you get paid interest on the larger and larger amount that you have. But since savings accounts are taxed every year, it's not compounded. Now, if you had an IRA, a retirement account that we call qualified, in other words, it was qualified, it was a retirement account that was exempt from yearly tax until you withdrew it later, or you bought some sort of annuity product, which is a domestic annuity product. You need to buy a foreign annuity product, and then the rules can change, so you be careful there. Domestic annuity product can be tax deferred. So you don't pay tax on it until you take it out, and only on the gains. So, compounding is amazing. So even if you're putting away $50 a month, you know, I mean, they use the term 500 a month, which is a lot. Let's cut it down by zero, and let's say you put in $50 a month for 40 years, okay? Well, you just lop off a zero, okay? So if you put in $50 a month at 2%, right, you would have $24,000. If you put in $50 a month for 40 years at 6%, you would have $93,000. Now, that is pretty healthy, in fact, for a lot of low-income people. That might exceed what you put in Social Security by force, right? So it is interesting. Compounding, I think it's important. And you know, Social Security was deemed only a supplement, okay? It was only a supplement, meant as a supplement to retirement. Somehow, a lot of people think it's a retirement. And they admit that it may not be enough, but that's all they're counting on. Or maybe, you know, some medical programs from the government to help and, you know, some other low-income assistance. But, you know, I'm a true believer that whenever we depend on somebody to pay part of our bills, they have power over us. You know, they can threaten us, threaten you with the, you know, removal of such subsidy. So no matter what you do, I mean, you know, I've seen people that run the gamut of income. And there's a couple of things that I see that are really, really stupid that they do, all right? One, the stupidest thing that I think somebody, even on a modest income, can do is buy a new car. Okay, I've always said I can, you know, I can afford any car I want. I have never bought a new car because in my mind and mathematically, it doesn't make economic sense. I mean, one, if I buy a new car, I'm paranoid that somebody will scratch it. That's kind of a weird thing. I don't want to buy a new car because the day I get my first scratch in it, I'll be like, oh, man. So what I do normally is I will buy, and I always have bought used cars. And I was young. I bought used cars that were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old or more. But as I've gotten older and my income is increased, now I buy a car that's got a year or two on it, you know. And that way you could buy, you know, let's say you look at an SUV that's 40 grand. And every SUV I see out there is 40 grand. Well, if you buy it new, it's 40 grand. And then you pay your sales tax on 40 grand and the dealer's destination fees and all the tax and all the other stuff. And you're out the door for 44, 45. And if you bought it used, you could probably get that same car a year, year and a half out for 30, 32 grand. So you save on the sales tax and you save the 8 grand and you put that 8 grand in a retirement account. And if you're looking at the $50 a month, $50 a month is $600 a year, and 10 years is $6,000. So about 12 years worth of $50 a month for the 40 years, about 12 years of the $50 a month would immediately be garnered by you by not spending it on a new car. Now, people buy new cars not because they look at the price anymore. You know, the price on television, at least when I was watching ads when I was a kid, showed the price of the car. Now, what do they show you? The payment. So somebody goes in and buys an SUV, or maybe they buy a little Honda or a Prius or whatever they might buy, and they only look at the payment, and the car companies are not stupid. One, the government's giving them really low interest rates because interest rates today are in the tank. So they're giving very, very low interest rates. And with the low interest rates, the payments are kept low, and then they stretch the payments out for, you know, 4 or 5. It used to be 3 years, and now I think it's up to 7 years. Well, look at the amount you pay for that $45,000 car with tax destination, and then you look at the interest you're paying on it, and even though you may be paying $150 a month or $200 a month or whatever you're paying, you're going to end up paying $50,000, $55,000 for that car. So, you know, when I see somebody on limited income drive up in a new car, I'm thinking, you know, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Don't understand. You know, I bought my wife a few new cars, you know. What do they say? Happy wife, happy life. And so the second thing they do is they go out to eat a lot, or they go to coffee every day. And, you know, $50 a month, if you go out to two lunches with friends, you're probably at your 50. So just foregoing $50 worth of lunches, two lunches a month, and putting that $50 into your IRA, you know, then you walk out with 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 grand or more. But I don't see that. And so, and it's kind of comical. You know, I go to the Roseville or go down to the shopping centers, and they're all new cars. No dents at all. And I know that nobody, everybody down there is not making, you know, buco bucks. Okay. So, yeah, on the market, obviously the tariffs are a problem. We've covered tariffs in past shows before. Tariffs are when a central body, like a government, wants to protect its domestic suppliers, let's say a domestic steel company, which is where the original tariffs took off, and they put a tariff, a fine or a penalty or a tax on incoming steel from foreigners, making the incoming steel more expensive. Right? The theory being is that now that the imported steel is more expensive because the tariff or the penalty or the tax, that people will more likely go to domestic suppliers that can now compete. The problem with the tariff is the money goes to the government. And I think an article I just wrote came out on that. Somebody commented in the lobby here. They read that article. Problem with tariffs is you don't get any of the money. It goes to the government. But the other more, you know, damaging issue about tariffs is that when you put a tariff on a good, it raises the price of that good overall in the economy. So if you put a tariff on steel, as a general rule, it's inflationary on the price of steel. Because the price of steel is the average of all retail prices of steel in the country. And if you raise the price of one by putting a tariff on it, the average cost of steel goes up because you've taken one of the calculation figures and raised it. So my article, and I've never really seen anybody take another spin on this. I haven't seen another analyst spin on it, which is interesting to me. I can't be the only analyst that maybe has thought of this, but I don't see anybody talking about this. If you want to protect domestic steel suppliers or any other supplier of a good or service by tariffs, don't put a tariff on it, which raises the price of everything to the consumer. Tariffs are inflationary. I'm not the only one that says that. You give a tax credit to the producing company in the country. So instead of a tariff, we get tax credit. Now he can lower his price. And if he lowers his price, the average price of the good or service will drop in the economy and the consumer will get the money. You will save more money. And you will also get the money from the tariff, which is not a tariff anymore. It's a tax credit. And then you will be able to spend more. You'll have more disposable income. So the economy would benefit as well. Now, the government is full of brilliant economists, why they allow tariffs. Nobody ever says, well, let's give them a tax credit instead. You know, it's kind of a no-brainer. You know, it kind of goes along with the government saying that, you know, we're concerned about high gas prices because of greedy oil companies, but at the same time, they don't want to lift the federal excise tax on gas. You know, if you were concerned about me, lift the tax. Now, one person had commented on the article, they'd said, well, if you give a tax credit to the big corporations, they won't give it back. They'll keep it. You know, that's really not the way it works. I mean, if they have a tax credit and they want to sell more steel, they'll basically plow it back into the price. So tariffs and taxes, in my opinion, tariffs and tax breaks, tax credits, would essentially do the same thing, except tariffs raise the price of inflation, reducing the amount of consumer disposable income. While a tax credit would lower the overall price, would lower the rate of inflation, causing deflation in a product, good, or service. And the consumer would have more money to spend, therefore spurring more money into the economy. So I don't know how much money the government raked in from all the tariffs, but you can count on the fact that it was an awful lot. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back, and we'll continue on.
giving, cause I'm working for a living. Hey, I'm not complaining, cause I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, 200 red. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living. Work. Working for a living. Cause I'm working for a living.
You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. So, onward on this rally. I mean, it has been, I've seen screens and, it is broad-based across most spectrums. Article out today from Yahoo Finance, put out by Emily McCormick. Stocks climbed Thursday, extending gains after Federal Reserve officials signaled they would be willing to ease monetary policy to help prop up the economy. Now, that's kind of an interesting statement there, you know. Federal officials be willing to ease monetary policy. Now, in this same page, there is a reference to an article by a top analyst that the feds will basically always have easy rates and that they won't be able to remove easy rates being low interest rates. Now, usury rates, what we call interest rates, called usury rates, generally throughout man's history, we think have been around 5%, 5%, 6%. When I was a kid, that's what it was. So now, of course, since the crisis, they dropped them to zero, and now they're standing around, depending on how long you want to loan your money, you know, 1.5% in your savings account. I think you can get savings accounts with 1% in there. And anytime they try to raise them, which they have been doing, you know, they have been trying to raise them. They went up to 2, I think, on the Fed overnight rate, somewhere in there. Now they're talking about lowering them again to help the economy. Well, you know, the economy should not, one, need to be helped by printing paper dollars. You know, I mean, that really doesn't do anything when you think of that, right? If we would have just put up a bunch of paper dollars and flood the markets with it, well, how does that really help? I mean, a paper dollar is only, right, paper. So, I mean, if creating paper with dead presidents on them and pretty colors and durable paper made prosperity, right? The more we print, the more prosperity we have, the more the market goes up. If printing paper solves problems, well, any government can print paper. How come we still have problems? I guess the answer to that would be, in my opinion, that printing paper solves temporary problems on the surface. It's an illusion. But it's an illusion that people buy. You know, if I was to print up $10 trillion and dump it into the banking system, the stock market would go up and inflation would hit and everybody's salaries would go up and their housing prices would probably go up in value. And everybody would be richer? Really? So I can just print paper and make everybody wealthier. See, the basic logic of that is flawed, right? But it does work on the illusion basis. It does make people think that they're richer. But, you know, when people call for government intervention or government assistance, or as they put it here, monetary policy being eased, that's what they're calling for. They're saying print paper and it'll appear better. Well, there are analysts, I myself or one of them, that hold the opinion that that really doesn't do anything. It's an illusion, the illusion of creating money. Now, what that illusion does is it does make stocks go up and housing prices go up and your salaries go up. But that illusion has vaporized in what a lot of people are seeing now. Right? Everybody's having a hard time making ends meet and the money is concentrating at the top. Now, the gun sight of the masses that are saying the money's concentrating at the top and it's greedy corporations or, well, it's lobby systems or whatever it is, they have been, you know, basically seduced by that illusion. I mean, inflation is called the very seductive illusion because it gives the appearance that you're doing better when your stock market's going up and your house prices are going up and your salary's going up. It gives the illusion, but then you turn around and more people are saying, hey, wait a minute, I can't make ends meet here. And that's the illusion. What should be done, what will never be done, is when the government starts printing money, people should complain right away and say, don't do that. Don't do that. Because 5 years from now, it's going to be worse. It's going to be more poor people. And that's what we're seeing. So Barclays chief U.S. economist Michael Gapin says that the dovish Federal Reserve, dovish meaning money printing, they're very easy on monetary policy, lower rates, print money, that's dove. Hawk means raise rates, don't print money. Gapin says that the Feds will slash interest rates by a half a percent, 50 basis points. At July meeting, followed by one more cut later this year. So they've been raising it by a quarter, okay? But now he's saying that they're going to cut it as a half. Now, the Feds left rates unchanged yesterday, Wednesday. Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, maintained the current interest rate. But he did have some dovish tones. Dovish meaning monetary easing. In the question and answer period with reporters after the decision was announced yesterday, the Fed also cut its forward rate projections. In other words, they say, well, we're not going to raise rates, but, you know, in the future we're going to do this. Well, they actually ease those as well. Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve chief, yesterday in the Q&A session, mostly blamed the U.S. trade war with China and weakening economic data as reasons for the dovishness. Gapin, meanwhile, said it's pretty clear the Fed is set up to ease policy at the July meeting. Now, the July meeting is what? It's coming. What? Another month. Most strategists Yahoo Finance has claimed to talk with are looking for two more rate cuts this year. Now, it begs the question, the Dow is closing in on an all-time high. So why are they thinking of cutting rates again? Gapin, the analyst, said, our view is that data is slowing, economic data is slowing. Risks to the outlook have risen. In other words, it's getting a little more risky. Inflation is soft. We'll talk about that in a second. And there are trade concerns. However, it's not just the trade story, says Gapin. There is plenty of evidence for the Fed to ease given the macro outlook. Now, inflation is soft. Well, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and, you know, the people that figure out inflation rates, Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out a bunch of economic stats and then inflation rates are added by another organization. The best inflation rate, in my opinion, is from shadowstats.com, but that's way off what you hear from the Fed. Now, inflation rates by the Fed have been basically saying very little, if any. Well, here's the question. I don't know about you, but to go out to eat, you know, I mean, now burgers are, what, $15 to $18 at a restaurant. Wow. Didn't that jump rather quickly? I thought burgers were $8 to $9 at a restaurant. No, now they're $14, $15 at some of the more gourmet restaurants, you know. I guess if you still go to Denny's, it might be $10, $11, but I think I did stop in at one of those regular places on my trip down to L.A., and burgers were $12 or $14, you know. I went to a local place here and had a falafel and something else and a drink. Not a beer or anything, just soda. Soda water is what I drink. I had a falafel and that was like $18. I was like, wow. My son, who, you know, I was packing from UC Irvine. I had to pick him up, come home. He was hungry and we had already eaten. He was complaining. So he wanted a fast food, and I'm not really a fan of fast food, but I took him to a fast food restaurant and I ordered the typical garbage food that a kid wants, which is a burger and fries and a drink. The combo, right? And it wasn't at, you know, it was just at a fast food restaurant, you know, with the sign and the drive through and all that. It was $9.50. Now, if I would have gotten everybody in the car, which were five of us because I have a family of five, if I would have ordered the same combo burger, fry, and drink meal, five times nine is $50 with tax. $50. I mean, wow. Gas is sitting at $4.20, but look at all some of the other things that have gone up in price. I mean, some cell phone companies, $1,000 for a cell phone. I routinely have seen people paying $200 for cell service if they have their family has cell service. Lord help you if you own a business and you're railed, you know, five ways from Sunday or whatever it is, six ways from Sunday, however that goes. Great. And, of course, hotels, you know, we saw tourist tax and resort fee. And, you know, I'm not staying at real fancy places because I'm kind of, you know, conservative guy. And it's just crazy. So it's just insane. And yet there's no inflation. I don't see it. What is interesting, and I've commented on this before, right, is that I believe inflation is running very high. But the feds believe otherwise, at least what they're posting. You know, they're saying inflation is not running very high. But from what I see, in my experience, inflation, you know, almost everything I bought in the last 10 years have doubled in price. Maybe not fuel. I don't know. I'd have to go back. But everything has doubled in price in the last 10, 12 years. But then feds don't. Feds are saying, well, inflation didn't 1.5%, 2%. I mean, believe that. And so is it there? I don't know. I mean, it's very, very difficult. And so Gapin here says that the feds will back down on their monetary tightening. And I can only tell you that if they start lowering rates again, the market will have the possibility of rising pretty dramatically, in my opinion. That is a opinion, Mr. and Mrs. Regulator. I will remind the listener that no one, no how, can project market movements at any time. But that is just an opinion of mine. Do I believe that they should lower rates? No, I do not. But if the economy gets soft again and people start losing their jobs, it's going to get tough. Now, I will say in my local community, I mean, people are looking for workers. I put an ad out on social media that my boys are willing to work for $15 to $18 an hour weed eating. And people are calling me almost nonstop. Why? The most common, you know, I ask people. The most common thing is nobody wants to work. Nobody wants to work. Now, I have seen some comments from people when I put that out there. They say, well, $15 an hour is not a living wage. Don't work for $15 an hour. Well, you know, when my kids can't do a job for $15 an hour because they're busy, I pick up the weed eater and I go do the job for $15 an hour. Because if I can work 4 hours and put $60 in my wallet for spending money, I'm going to do it. You know, do I have the time to do it? No, but I'll get up at 6 in the morning and go out there. I'll go out there before it gets dark and do it. You know, my family thinks I'm nuts, but, you know, I'm a worker. That's what I do. So I don't know about this. I don't want to get into this living wage thing, you know, whether 15 is a living wage or not. All I know is that, and I'm not going to be one of these guys that said I cut lawns for a quarter. Yeah, we all know we all worked for a dime and we all walked to school and back uphill both ways. Yeah, I got it, you know, but the reality of the matter is I'm not comparing 50 cents an hour to cutting lawns to $15 an hour now. That's ludicrous because it's inflationary. What I am saying is that, you know, for my boys, they're willing to work. They're willing to show up. You know, they're willing to do the job right and work hard. And the common thing that I get in this county is nobody wants to work. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. Anyway, so the market. Let's take a look at the Dow. Do I think this can continue? Well, the S&P hits all time high. Okay, that's out today at Yahoo Finance. S&P hits all time high. Okay. That's an all-time high. Shortly after the market opened, the index S&P reached an all-time high of 2956.2. The Dow, meanwhile, is a couple hundred points from an all-time high. Interest rates are falling. Again, that's kind of more complicated and convoluted to explain that, so I will not do that this afternoon. And people are looking at this looser monetary policy comments by Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve. Now, Trump was kind of trouncing Jerome Powell, you know, as you know, those of you who watch the media, trouncing him, saying that he was causing the market to correct downward. So is Mr. Powell succumbing to pressure? I don't know. But I, you know, with the Dow reaching all-time high and the Fed's cutting rates again, I think there are going to be some people out there that are going to say, "Yo, great, we're going to cut the rates and it'll be easier to borrow more money to buy another new car," right? That's how the new car industry, in my opinion, has survived the last 10 years, is that they can give you a loan for 2, 3%. I think if interest rates were at 6, you wouldn't see all those new cars in there. But I think if they cut rates, you know, some people are going to say, well, they should cut rates. And other people are going to say, see, I'm struggling in the markets that are all time high and they're going to cut rates again, making the market go higher. And a lot of people are going to say that. And so they kind of draw the conclusion, market at all time high and I'm starving. It's got to be, you know, the system, whether it's capitalism or lobbyism or fascism or corporate welfare or whatever it is. And it's no wonder that a lot of people out there calling for more socialistic programs or democratic socialism to take hold, because they're blaming the system. And in my opinion, they're blaming the system because nobody tells them the truth on what's really causing the problem. You know, it's not the system. Per se, it's not the economic system model. It's how they're running it. This is what's causing the problem. And one of the major, you know, reasons people can't afford things is because the Federal Reserve and their easy monetary policies, dropping interest rates to 1%, encouraging you to buy a $40,000 new car where you end up paying $58,000 for it for interest for 7 years on your car payment loan and you don't really care as long as you can pay $180 a month, you're happy. You never read the fine print. Well, I can afford $180 a month for a brand new car. That's not much. Really? Then how come you can't afford $50 in an IRA? That new car, when you drive the new car off the lot, you know, you're going to get banged 20-25% right out of the lot. You could buy a year-old car at a dealer's pre-owned, certified. It'd be, I could put the two next to each other. You can't tell the difference, except looking at the odometer. One's got more miles on it. 20,000 miles just to get a warranty and everything, and you save 10 grand? Crazy. So, yeah, you can afford $180 a month or $240 a month for a car payment. You can't afford $50 a month into an IRA. That doesn't make sense. And I have seen a lot of people that say, I'm not saving for retirement. It's useless. They see the magic number you used to see on TV. You need $180,485 is your number. No. You just need more than what you got. You know, you just need, you're going to get Social Security. But you need to buffer that, and an extra 80, 90 grand in a retirement account by saving $50 a month would help. Or take the new car payment. Don't buy the new car and put that into the IRA. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. My name is Mark Cunaberti. It is always a pleasure. You have been listening to Money Matters, your economic forum on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberti, the host. Since 2005, Money Matters, Money Management Radio, our website, which is a no-charge website, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, is moneymanagementradio.com. You can send me an email to the program director at the station that you're hearing the show on. The show emanates from KVMR FM in Nevada City. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative. Yeah. Through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge Station staff members or underwriters. Remember, the indices I may have mentioned on the show are managed and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk depending on the types of investments. There may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including loss of principal. Have a great day. God bless. And go make some money. Get back.